Running for office? You gotta have a campaign manager, interns. What about embedded Facebook and Google team members? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Jed Kim, in for Molly Wood. If there's one thing that's clear from the 2016 election, it's that the internet and social media have a huge influence on the political process. These days, you want to run a successful campaign, you need an effective digital strategy. Fortunately for politicians, big tech companies like Google and Facebook provide representatives to embed within a campaign. They help navigate digital platforms and give tech support. But are those tech reps getting too much access to politicians and future leaders? Daniel Stevens is executive director of the Campaign for Accountability, a nonprofit watchdog group in Washington, D.C. I asked him, what's in it for the tech companies?
The tech companies see this as a way to help the campaigns run ads on their platforms. And so Facebook and Google think that if the Cruz campaign or the Trump campaign are spending millions of dollars running ads on their platforms, then they'll provide the staffers on how to run those ads free of charge.
And we have the Federal Election Commission, which is supposed to be regulating things like this. How do they work in this kind of tech aspect?
The Federal Election Commission is supposed to keep campaigns honest and make sure that they follow federal election laws. The guidelines that the Federal Election Commission has issued around this issue state that tech companies must provide services to campaigns in the same way that they provide services to corporations or other consumers. So if there's obvious evidence that tech companies are providing free services to campaigns, so-called in-kind contributions to these campaigns, then the Federal Election Commission can investigate and bring enforcement action against the companies for violating the rules. It's really hard in these cases, though, to know what exactly is going on. If Facebook provides a staffer to a campaign, is that the same as providing a staffer to a corporation? We think that some investigation needs to be done because we can't see inside the companies. We can't see what exactly Facebook or Google are providing to these campaigns.
So we've seen widespread usage of tech embeds in 2016. What are we expecting to see in 2020?
The incentives exist for tech companies to build incredibly close relationships with politicians and elected officials. Congress is considering a major privacy legislation that would greatly impact the tech companies. Now, during the midterm elections, Facebook said that it would not offer embeds during the 2018 midterms. And so I think that they've been worried about the attention on this practice, and so they've stepped back from that practice. However, the job openings are still there that tech companies are offering positions to people to reach out to campaigns. In India, with the 2019 elections coming up, Facebook has a number of job openings, both in India and in the U.S., that are advertising positions to reach out to Indian politicians. So if they're doing it in India this year, it's safe to assume, I think, that they would do this in the U.S. in 2020.
Daniel Stevens is executive director of the Campaign for Accountability. He says there isn't much evidence that tech companies are taking election interference very seriously. In fact, this summer, his team posed as Russian trolls and tried to run ads on Google. Says they got through without a problem.
And now for some related links. Hi, yes, it's me, Molly Wood. I am at CES in Las Vegas, the big gadget and media and entertainment tech show, where I'm kind of running around seeing what I can see. CES is still trying to find its way into the post-gadget future, and it's going a little slowly as we try to figure out whether consumer electronics really matter anymore compared to the cloud, social media, and the all-powerful smartphone. Then again, though, things always start out a little quirky at CES with things like a bread-making vending machine, huggable robotic pillows, and wearables of questionable usefulness, and electric skateboards with neon lights on them that companies hope you'll buy instead of taking scooters. Here's a little report from the field.
I'm starting things off on Sunday night at CES Unveiled, which is sort of like the big press kickoff. There's a bunch of different exhibitors, there's full disclosure, some bars, and free food, but that is not why I'm here. I'm here to find out what is going on with this skateboard over here.
This one can actually go as fast as 35 kilometers per hour. It's built for commuters. It's built for people who want to travel in a different style. Because when you are using a Bird scooter, you don't really own a Bird scooter. You still have the time to look for it. But we want it to be more stylish, so you can ride the Spectras. You can own the Spectra, yet you can still share the Spectras.
Now I am on the hunt for a thing I saw when I just walked in, which is a washing machine that folds your clothes for you. Hold. Hang with me. I'll be right there. Okay, I'm bailing on the folding machine because there are like 30 people in that line, but I'll come back around. I'm going to go find this hologram thing. All right, I'm here at Hypervision looking at an integrated 3D holographic display system. That's all I know so far. I'm going to ask this lady.
Yes, okay, so this is it's a Hypervision 3D hologram display solution. So basically what it is this is just basically one device that is, looks like a hologram that's floating in midair.
And then who would buy it? Is it a business installation? Is it an art installation?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically it can be used for anything that you can kind of dream of. It's used in retail, in events, at kind of conferences, anything like that. It's a way of using like a display solution, but it's definitely capturing a different kind of audience because people are stopping to look at it, which I think is the difference.
Tell us your name.
Colin Crook.
And what are we looking at here?
So we're looking at Astrocast, which is a company that has created a network of nanosatellites for the IoT industry. And basically what we do is our transmitter goes into fresh purification water systems in very remote locations on the planet. So if a villager, if that breaks down or the water becomes depurified, then that sends a signal up to our satellite in a low orbit, which sends another signal to the water purification company, and then they go fix it in the matter of a couple of days. So that would have taken about 2 months, you know, three months.
So, okay, I have to say, though, when you first said that, all of that, the nanosatellites for IoT, I definitely did not think you were going to go to water purification.
Right.
That's a very specific thing.
Yes, it is. So I think one thing we've all seen in IoT and Alphabet and Amazon and companies like that are working on, which is bringing, you know, cellular coverage to people in remote places like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right? That's all kind of noble so that they can stream videos on Facebook and stuff. But I think that the sort of next evolution of IoT or what IoT's promise really is fixing human problems and allowing machines to do that and talk to one another. So, you know, that's really expensive over cellular networks and it's very expensive over traditional satellite networks. But we're hoping to make that very cost effective. And so that all of the SpaceX launches aren't just rockets going into the orbit, right? They're actually putting things up there that will benefit real human beings.
Now, I do feel obliged to point out that bringing people internet access from space is also about closing the digital divide so that people can have greater economic and educational opportunity and not just so they can stream video. But clean water, also good. All right, I also have to make a correction. The machine that folds laundry does not wash clothes. It only folds them. And it can't do fitted sheets, so kind of forget about it. Now, Monday is press day at CES, so the whole day was a series of press conferences from big names like LG, Toyota, Qualcomm, Samsung, Intel. Big announcements included LG's roll-up TV screen, which rolls itself down into a little console so it doesn't bother you with its bigness in your modern, cool living room. In other news from Monday, Apple doesn't usually come to CES at all, but the company did announce a bunch of new Internet of Things partnerships, which show that it's finally getting serious about its HomeKit platform and that devices like smart plugs and locks and lights and smart doorbells might be the actual new gadget frontier. But speaking of the new frontier, there was also a preview of the potentially inevitable robot wars of the future in Las Vegas on Monday. A company called Promobot announced that one of its robots was hit by a self-driving Tesla Model 3 and did not survive the incident. There's video on YouTube that you'll find on our website, marketplacetech.org, along with other CES coverage from around the web. It's not funny, you guys. That robot was expensive and now it can't do CES at all. But the video is pretty amazing. All right, more to come tomorrow from CES. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.